read the record very diligently, and I can find no similar drawing anywhere at all. Now, for the convenience of the court, we have extracted the only drawing in the record which shows the property in question. We've attached a copy of it as an exhibit to our pre-submission brief, which I've asked the marshal to furnish to you. And I've also enlarged it here, and I'd like to go over that with the court at this time. This enlargement is of Exhibit B, which is found in an exhibit to the affidavit of the City Secretary of the City of Waco, which is in the record, which was before the trial court, which was before the Court of Civil Appeals, and of course, before this court here. This is the only exhibit that shows all the property for convenience sake, for clarity purposes. We have eliminated some of the drawings in this blue area here, which is McDonald's, because it had nothing to do with the lawsuit, the surveyor's mark and whatnot. This is the property in question, colored in blue here. I think it matches the one that's attached to our brief there, exhibit here to me. The easement about which there's been quite a bit of dispute is indicated right here on the western side, the southwestern corner of Ellis's property. It starts, this little brown donut looking shape here is the public street, that's Castle Avenue. This is the only access that McDonald and Ellis has to this property from the public street. Across the northern portion, or nearly bisecting the northern portion of Ellis and McDonald's property here, is Waco Creek, which is the city has a drainage easement there. There's also a utility easement in connection with it. It's some 20 to 30 feet wide. There's not any means of reasonable access from the northern portion of the property down here, so the only other portion is access is the Castle Drive here, across the easement on the McDonald Ellison property here. This is Jensen, the respondent's property here, and then Mr. Allgood, just for clarity purposes, his name appears in the record, his property is here. The Court of Civil Appeals drawing, and the opinion which seems to follow the nature of that drawing, shows this property to extend on out here, which is an error and it's not in the record at all. The only place I could find such a drawing was in Jansen's brief, which is filed before the Civil Appeal. This is the only drawing at this point in the record.
Mr. Atkins, where is that retaining wall the Court of Civil Appeal spoke of?
The retaining wall, Your Honor, comes along the western edge of the property right
it's,
here.
It's the heavy dark line there?
Yes, sir.
No.
No, sir. Where the dotted line is here, do you have my copy?
Yes, sir.
All right.
It's the dotted line inside the heavy dark line.
Right. The dotted line shows the easement, which is actually on Ellis and McDonald's property. Of course, Hill's opinion, I think, shows it the other side of the property line section there also. The retaining wall is to the east of the easement. It goes along this direction right here. And then there is a smaller retaining wall along this property line here, which is not really in question.
And the dark line then is the property line.
That's correct, Your Honor. The easement was granted, dedicated to the City of Waco by one shoemaker. He had not material of this lawsuit except shoemaker is a common source of title between Ellis and Jansen over here. But it was dedicated by a shoemaker in, I believe, 1937 for access to the city to come in here with a storm sewer drain which runs underneath this 15-foot easement, 15 feet wide and long.
I'm sorry, it wasn't clear to me, is it? The retaining wall along the dotted line in your...
Yes, sir. It's just to the east, the dotted line there, Your Honor. Follows the easement. The property line is the dark line. For your information, Your Honor, the
exhibit that we've blown up here and that we furnished to the court here is found at page 64 of the transcript. And this is an enlargement of it with some of the modifications that I mentioned earlier. Your Honor, the focal issue in this case, when you boil it down to the bare bones, is simply this, is the interpretation of Article 5517, which has been interpreted by the courts for about 85 years. Interpretation of that statute as applies to the facts of this case. That's it in a nutshell. And then to present...
Well, perhaps I was misled a little bit by the Court of Civil Appeals map. Who now is claiming the easement?
Well, Your Honor, Jansings dispossessed Ellis and McDonald from the use of that easement when they went in there or attempted to go into on the easement to surface it, make it an all-weather surface to get from Castle Drive to their property down there.
And that's notwithstanding that the property line of Ellis and McDonald extends to the entire easement, as I understand it?
Yes, sir. It extends up to Castle Drive here on the west, and then there's just a little segment here that separates the easement from Allgood. In other words, it's just a 15-foot easement for McDonald and Ellis to get down the easement to their main property here. It's a publicly dedicated easement. An instrument in writing from shoemakers in the city of Waco and accepted by the city of Waco, and I believe that was 1937, giving contiguous landowners the right to use it as well as the general public. Of course, as long as it didn't interfere with the city's use of the subterranean portion of the easement for a storm sewer. 5517, Your Honor, and to refresh your memory, has been reproduced. I think you'll find it on page 2 of our pre-submission briefs there, the terms of it, because we're going to be discussing that in more detail later on. But just in a nutshell, that statute just prohibits the acquisition of any right or any title to any publicly dedicated road, street, alley, or grounds by adverse possession. And that's what Jansen has attempted to do. The trial court held to the contrary. The Court of Civil Appeals reversed that case and remanded it not only as to the right and use of the easement, but as to the entire tract of land, about which really there was no question raised by Jansen at the trial court level. At the trial court level, Mr. Jansen also abandon his plea of abandonment of this easement. And to present our view on this interpretation of Article 5517, which has been consistently interpreted by the appellate courts for about 85 years, and our view of the application of that statute as interpreted, I'm going to yield the remainder of my time to Mr. Meinke.
May it please the court, I would like to briefly give the court some of the language of this public dedication so that we know what we're talking about. It was made by Mr. Shoemake in a written acknowledged agreement between him and the city of Waco, acknowledged by him and by the mayor, and passed by resolution of the city council and recorded in the deed records of McLennan County, where it still remains. It says that this public dedication is made for the use and accommodation of the city of Waco, the owners of contiguous lots, and the general public. Mr. McNamara repeatedly refers in his briefs to the city's easement, but there's not any city's easement here. It's just what the public dedication instrument says it is. It goes on to say, so that the property would at all times hereafter be and remain open as an easement, alley, and passageway. He's referred to it in his brief as a drainage easement. The city commission, in adopting this public dedication, found that the public will be benefited. A more convenient and more accessible alley and passageway will be provided, and that said alley, as altered, will provide a more commodious and convenient means of ingress and egress to adjacent property owners, the public, and the city of Waco, and will offer a connection with and outlet to Castle Avenue. That's in the transcript of page 49. Now, this public dedication was accepted. As I stated, it was placed on record. The city immediately used it by bringing in equipment and constructing this underground storm drain. The public dedication is shown on all the maps and books and plats down at the city of Waco and has been for all these years. The summary judgment affidavits on file show that it has never been abandoned. That argument, which was made in the court below, has now been dropped by Mr. McNamara. We filed our motion for summary judgment and presented it to the court because the only defense that Mr. Jansen is making is that he has adverse possession to this 15 by 130 foot strip. And we think the law, Article 5517, simply says you can't do that. That limitations does not run as to a public dedication. The language of Article 5517 says, nor shall any person ever acquire by occupancy or adverse possession any right or title to any part or portion of any road, street, alley, sidewalk, or grounds which have been laid out or dedicated in any manner to public use. Now we think that's pretty plain. So have the courts. We think that it means that we were entitled to judgment as a matter of law. We think that that means that had Mr. Jansen erected a brick wall around his property and kept everybody off for the last 40 years, that he still couldn't get adverse possession. That's not the fact, but we think that would be the result according to the statute. Now, this statute is not an unusual one or a peculiar quirk to Texas. If you look in Corpus Juris Secundum under Adverse Possession, section 16, page 663, the rule is stated, generally speaking, title to property dedicated or devoted to a public use cannot be acquired by prescription or adverse possession. After that quotation, the text goes on to point out that there are one or two states where they have specific statutes on it in which they make a specific exception, that it doesn't apply to parks or it doesn't apply to alleys or something of that nature. And the authors of that treatise cite 23 jurisdictions, including the state of Texas, that have that rule. And there's not one jurisdiction cited that has a contrary rule. There isn't any contrary rule. Now, we cited to the Court of Civil Appeals the cases that have been decided in the past on this subject, not a great number of them, I think six or seven at the most, that really deal with the point that we're talking about here. Every one of them held that you just can't get adverse possession of property that's been dedicated to public use. There's not one case to the contrary ever been decided by any court that I know about except this one below. The most recent case that we cited to the court was the Markgraf versus Salem Cemetery, the San Antonio Court of Civil Appeals in 1976. In that case, they had a cemetery that had all 6 or 8 acres that was dedicated as a cemetery many, many years ago, but they built a fence only around a part of it, only around 2 or 3 acres, and only made burials for many, many years within the fence. Farmers around the cemetery using it, cultivating it, enjoying it for 20, 30 years. Cemetery decided they needed the land outside the fence. So they said, farmers get off. The Court of Civil Appeals said, farmers can't get adverse possession to it, period.
Counsel, does the record in this case show what precipitated the Ellis to file this lawsuit?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. Mr. McDonald and Mr. Ellis bought this property in 1979. They had it surveyed. They were never stopped from surveying it. They talked to the neighbors about it. They talked to the neighbors about making a concrete approach on the curb. There is a curb out on Castle Drive that you'd have to jump over right today to put a car up onto the alleyway. And they wanted to make an approach there. They talked to Jansen about it. They talked to Mr. Allgood about it. Everybody was agreeable. He made arrangements with the city of Waco to have it put in. Workmen showed up to do the work, and they were told to leave if they could not do the work. That's what the record shows.
Would it require taking that retaining wall down? Was that
absolutely not. It has nothing to do with the retaining wall, Your Honor. We didn't show the retaining wall on here. I would have had to draw it in, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to just make a copy of what the record shows. The retaining wall is not here, but it lies generally a foot or so to the east of the dotted line. That would be to the right-hand side of the dotted line.
Well, I have trouble seeing how you could make an approach and get into the Ellis property without going through the retaining wall.
Well, that is the Ellis property, Your Honor. Everything that's blue is our property.
Well, isn't the retaining wall on the right-hand side of the strip?
Let me illustrate
if I can, Your Honor. It's maybe not that big a deal, but
well, the wall, the retaining wall, comes right along this dotted line and to the right of it, somewhere down in this area, and then it turns and goes back over this way.
My question is, to get on the Ellis track from that approach, you have to go through the retaining wall.
Absolutely not, John. But to get over to some parts of it, you would.
The wall doesn't cross Castle Drive, I think.
Absolutely not, John.
Does it end at the end of the Jansen property, or does it go on part of it? In other words, can you go the length of that easement you show there, then turn to the right to get on Ellis property?
Your Honor, I believe the record shows that it comes down in this area somewhere, and that he's getting on his own property, of course, when he goes right here. He could either reach the retaining wall here and come in here, or he could continue on down the easement to an area where he would not have to reach the retaining wall.
I just didn't use the right words. Breach is what I was asking.
All right.
There are about, to be sure I understand Judge Spears' question, so I understand your map. A car could come up Castle Drive and go into the dedicated area without going through the retaining wall?
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. There is nothing whatsoever to prevent a car from driving onto the easement, except Mr. Jansen, of course, and traversing its length down to the end of it today. There are no trees, there are no walls, there are no improvements whatsoever. Now, I think there are some trees down in the rear of the area, but there are no fences whatsoever. There are no trees on the easement, but there's some beyond it.
Has the public ever used this little dedicated area?
Well, the summary judgment record shows that it was used for the construction of the storm drain generally around 1937. That the city knows about it, that it's used every day when it rains, of course, to drain the water off of the street. And they've been inspecting it for the purposes of seeing whether it needed to be maintained or not maintained at least every 2 or 3 years. Now, if you're asking me, has it ever been surfaced with gravel or concrete, I don't think it has. I don't believe there's anything in the record about that. Now, this statute is almost 100 years old, as best I can tell. I think it was about the laws of 1895 or somewhere in there. There are early cases, Richardson versus Lone Star Salt Company, that are simply cases between private individuals, just exactly like this suit is. It didn't involve any city or any county, in which they applied the statute. They held that where it is publicly dedicated, no person can get adverse possession or title by adverse possession, and limitation of title doesn't run in favor of nor against any person.
Counsel, Article 5517, any portion of any road, I take it this is not a road?
I wouldn't call it a road, Your Honor.
Street?
No, I wouldn't call it a street. It specifically is an alley, Your Honor.
It is an alley.
It is an alley, a passageway, by its own language.
It's an alley or ground, Your Honor.
I said that's included in the dedication.
It is.
We'll read the dedication again.
For the use and accommodation of the city of Waco, the owners of contiguous lots, and the general public, so that it would at all times hereafter be and remain open as an easement, alley, and passageway from to and from Castle Drive. We cited these cases to the Court of Civil Appeals, and we cited, I believe, six cases to them that directly held what we're contending here today. They did not discuss one of them at all or even mention it, which was Reese versus the railroad, but they did specifically mention five of them, very, very brief, one sentence about each one of them. Said one of them, well, that involved the cemetery, and well, the other one, that involved the city, and the other one involved something else. But they don't discuss the cases. I'm not sure whether they're, what the rationale or the reasoning of the judges was, why they ruled the way they did. All I know is they refused to apply the statute. They might as well have held that we're not going to apply this statute in this situation. It may be that they are specifically holding that a private individual like Mr. McDonald or Mr. Ellis cannot use this statute. That's the effect of their decision, of their judgment. They reversed the judgment below. If they had so held that, then it's contrary to every one of those cases that we cited to them. Contrary to the specific language of the statute. There's nothing in the statute here that says, well, this applies only to where there's a city that, or county that's a part of it. Mr. McNamara has made that argument before and may hear today.
Well, are you contending that you can put the bridge in there, or are you complaining that, are you arguing that you're entitled to the whole easement?
Your Honor, we think the judgment below gave us a fee simple title to all of our property, which did include the easement, but it also recognized the validity of the easements and our rights under it and their rights and the City of Waco's rights and the public rights to use it. It's an alley. Everybody is helped and furthered by the decision of the court below. That's all we ask. We don't want to exclude anybody. We just want to use it. They stopped us from using it and said, get off, we can't do it. That's all we're asking. Now, we also submit to the court very respectfully that even if this statute didn't exist, if it wasn't on the books, and there had been any Article 5517 established, nevertheless, the summary judgment record made below, which was fully developed, all our depositions were taken, affidavits were filed, showed without question that they never did one thing that would show the kind of hostile and adverse possession and notorious possession that would amount to limitations title. They just never even got close. The only thing they ever did was mow the grass, apparently. Whenever they'd mow the grass in their yard, they'd mow this alley. And they're claiming, apparently, that gives them limitations title to it, which to me, I don't think that I'm getting any title in the alley behind my house when I mow the grass there. I want it to look nice. It's near my house, and I mow it, but I'm not trying to take it away from anybody.
That is not fenced off, I take it.
There is no fence. There is no improvement. There is no obstruction. This is a completely open alleyway.
Who built the retaining wall along the dedication?
Mr. Albert B. Shoemake did that, Your Honor.
Channing Jansen's predecessor?
No, he's our predecessor. Mr. Ellison McDonald's predecessor. And, Your Honor, he did that because there's a difference in elevation there. And he had to have a retaining wall so they wouldn't have a big slope. He put the fence on it, I'm sure, and I'm just speculating, so that, you know, nobody fell off of this 10-foot retaining wall and got hurt. And he didn't put it around the easement because he had no right to fence in that easement. It was a public dedication. He had no right to block that off or keep anybody off of it. He couldn't have fenced it even had he wanted to. The reason why we're contending that the summary judgment record didn't even get close on adverse possession, even if you don't consider the statute, is that they have to tack on their predecessor to get 10 years. Their predecessor is Newman Copeland, testified unequivocally. I never made any claim to that property. I never told anybody it was mine. When I transferred my property to Mr. and Ms. Jansing, I only intended to transfer to them just what I had bought by lot and block description. They have no privity, therefore, with regard to the claim of adverse possession. They lack 10 years. They absolutely cannot get there on adverse possession, whether you apply this statute or you don't apply the statute.
Thank you, counsel. Hear your argument from respondent.
Mr. McNamara will argue for respondent.
As please the court, there are some areas that were covered in the opening argument by petitioners that I want to address as early as possible in my remarks so that from our standpoint we will have clearly before the court the facts as we feel the record discloses the facts to be, and which I think that you will necessarily need to have clearly in your mind in order to make the decision that you will be called upon to make in this case. In the first place, the opening statement was made that this is a trespass to try title case. Well, the fact of the matter is the plaintiff's original petition was filed in the form of a trespass to try title action. However, this does not come before this court as such an action. It comes before this court as a summary judgment matter because the petitioners, the plaintiffs in the trial court, presented to the trial court and the court granted a summary judgment so that the defendants, the respondents here, have not had an opportunity to present to any fact finder the evidence that it would like to present on the question of adverse possession. It's obvious that the trial court concluded that Article 5117 absolutely prohibited any right of the Jansings to acquire any interest whatsoever in the property that is in dispute. Now the next thing I want to point out to the court is that the remark was made that this case, that the position of the defendants, the respondents here, is only as to the 15-foot strip, and that is not the case. As a matter of fact, in our pleadings, I'll read from them, in the defendant's first amended original answer, paragraph 6, defendants would further show the court that these defendants and their predecessors entitled have acquired by the 10-year statute of limitation the title to the strip of land involved in this lawsuit being described as follows to wit, and then follows a field note description which is exactly tracks the field note description prepared by the surveyor who was appointed upon the application of the petitioners and whose his report was made and his plat and field notes were filed in this case. And it's a fact that the field notes that are involved not a 15-foot strip of land, but a strip of land which has on its north line 129 and 5/10 feet along the lot 4. Then it goes across the top. Maybe I would be more helpful if I was by the flat.
This easement that I'm talking about and surveyor's field notes, which incidentally are attached to and made a part of our amended brief which we filed. It starts at this point on Castle Drive, and this point here is the, that would be the southeast corner of Lot 3, which belongs to Mr. Jansing, and the southwest corner of Lot 4, out of which Mr. Shoemaker made the dedication to the city of Waco. Beginning at this point, which is the common boundary line between Lot 3 and Lot 4, and it goes to the northeast corner of Lot 3, which would also be the northwest corner of Lot 4. Then it goes not 15 feet, but it goes 18.35 feet, and then it parallels back again, down again to this point in the Capitol Drive, and then it goes south along the south line of Lot 4, which is this property over here, 18.85 feet, so that there is an excess on the east side of the easement of more than 3 feet. And that is outside of the easement, but it's within the property that now lies within the Jansing's yard, and it's west of the retaining wall. The retaining wall lies not 15 feet east of Lot 4's west boundary line, but it lies 18 and a half or 18 and three quarters feet east of that point, so that there's a strip of land from 3.5 to 3.85 feet lying east of the easement and west of the retaining wall. So when the remark is made that we're claiming only 15 feet, that is not supported by the record. Mr. Jansing testified in his affidavit in response to their motion for summary judgment that this fence, referring to the retaining wall, was the east boundary, east boundary line of the property. In other words, he was said that this is what he understood to be the east boundary line of the property. Mr. Copeland, the predecessor in title to Mr. Jansing, his affidavit in opposition to the, in answer to the motion for summary judgment, said he claimed all of the property up to the retaining wall and the chain link fence, which would include this 3.5 or more strip of land lying all along the retaining wall. Now, the plat which has been shown here and does not show, as court pointed out a moment ago, the location of the retaining wall. So to be accurate, the retaining wall is not this black line, as I understood counsel to say. This black line is the west boundary line of Lot 4. It is not the retaining wall.
He was talking about the black line on the south there.
No, sir, this is not the retaining wall.
I understand. There's a retaining wall over there.
The retaining wall, Your Honor, goes, it parallels the easement pretty well, 3.5 feet east of there, all the way down to just before you get to Castle Drive, and then it circles around. The plat, which is attached to and made a part of the refiled in the Court of Civil Appeals, correctly shows the retaining wall, and the retaining wall does run north of Lot 4. It extends beyond that, so that anyone who wanted to use this easement to get into this property, they would come in from Castle Drive, and from Castle Drive to the retaining wall, I'm guessing, would be maybe 10 or 12, 15 feet. But you cannot get into this property at any place here because the evidence showed Mr. Hoffman, the man who built this retaining wall in 1937, said that it's from 8 to 15 feet high. It's a massive structure. He described how it was built with iron in it, and it's been there for over 40 years now and doesn't have a crack in it. It's a massive structure. And I asked him about breaching this wall, if it would weaken the wall, if it would jeopardize it, the integrity of the wall, if it would breach so as to have access into this, and he said, no, it would not. It is a very massive structure. But there is no point in here where you can enter this property unless you do breach this retaining wall.
You go out the north end? Can you go out the north end?
The retaining wall comes further up this way. I'm not sure just exactly where it stops along here, but it does extend beyond lot 4 and beyond lot 3 up into this area at some point. But you could not go across here because at this point is the end of the city's present drainage structure, and it has a drainage pipe, I suppose, that high that you have to go off of. It's just an abrupt drop off, maybe 4 feet high, or at least that high right here. So that would have to be continued with. Now, there is an existing alley that comes right here. It's shown on this flat. This is an existing alley. And it lies north of lot 3, and it's the alley that used to run all the way through this property and back down this way, which Mr. Shoemaker swapped the city of Waco, this property, and gave the city the easement here. And then it's the red flat of the whole thing to show that you come on back around here on Chester Drive, and you can also come back in here on another easement similar to this and pick up this same alley and go back south around Castle Heights. In other words, there was an alley all the way around Castle Heights.
Council, if your side wins this lawsuit, can Mr. Ellis get onto his property from Castle Drive?
No, sir, not from Castle Drive, because his property doesn't touch Castle Drive.
What Mr. Ellis can do, and what he's doing now, is coming in off of West Waco Drive. This property right here, this is his entrance and that. He can either come in that way or he can come in this alley. But his property doesn't touch Castle Drive.
And I take it this map is an error.
Yes, sir, it is an error. It does not show the retaining wall.
Well,
also, the map prepared by the Court of Civil Appeals.
Counsel, would you folks advance this to me?
Yes.
We're having a problem. It occurs to me that a person can enter here and go out up there.
No, sir. Well, if you had a ladder, you could do it, Your Honor, but you can't do it in any kind of a vehicle. It's utterly impossible to drive a vehicle across there, not only because of the retaining wall and because of the height of the drainage. Oh, that's a tremendous drainage thing back there. But also because this property, where it shows the easement there, is a yard. It's just like the yard in anybody's home. It's a grassy area. The Jansens use it just like they do the yard on the other side of their house. And if you attempted to drive a vehicle of any kind over there, in the first place, unless it was extremely dry weather, you couldn't negotiate it because you would bog down. Secondly, if you're going to use much traffic on there, something is going to have to be done in order to protect the drainage pipe that's underneath there. In other words, Mr. McDonald attempted to do was when the Jansen stopped it, he was just going to come out there and run right across the yard with the city wasn't doing any work out there. That's the city of Waco with Mr. McDonald.
Council, I'm not clear about the map.
Yes, sir.
Council, the council says that the exhibit over there is in the record and that this map is not in the record.
The map that, well, I'm not sure now which one you
picked. Well, it's the map that... Of course,
yes, sir. He's correct. It is not in the record. This map is in the record, but this map does not show correctly the map that is in the record.
This part right here, when this property was replanted, Mr. Hoffman replanted it. This was called Lot 4, Lot A, this was Lot 5, Lot 6, 7, 8, 9, and so on around. This is a little cul-de-sac, and these lots just fall right around the cul-de-sac. This part of the property was owned by Mr. Hoffman, with this property here. In other words, the property was conveyed to Mr. Ellis and Mr. McDonald included over to this land. And this is in the record as part of one of the deeds that are in record. On the same day that Mr. Hoffman sold this property to Mr. Ellis and Mr. McDonald, he also sold a 42
foot strip of land which went out to Oriental Avenue, which is accessed here. He sold that to a man by the name of Wiley. So at the time that they bought this, they had been accessed out to Oriental Drive by this 42-foot strip here. But they didn't acquire that, Mr. Hoffman sold somebody else. They then had 150 feet on West Waco Drive. Since that time, they've sold off this 90 feet. They still have this property right here. They can and do use this as an entrance way into here. They're doing it right now. They can also use this alley.
Counsel, my question was, is that map in the record?
This map is correct, Your Honor, except that it does not show the retaining wall.
Okay.
But for that, yes, it's the correct map. Now, the only official document in this record
that correctly depicts this situation is the surveyor's report. The surveyor's report is in the record. The surveyor's report and map copy of it is attached to my amended brief. And it shows the retaining wall. It shows the 15-foot strip. And that is the correct depiction of what the property is like on the ground. And that's where this field note description comes from that I used in my amended pleading to set out what it is that we're claiming.
Well, does Mr. Jansen have a fence?
No, sir, not no more than. Bear in mind, Your Honor, that this retaining wall, this property over here is considerably lower than the property over here, from 8 to 15 feet. The retaining wall is level at about maybe 3 or 4 feet high, looking at it from lot 3. On top of that is about a 4-foot chain link fence mounted on the top here.
Now, where is the chain link fence?
On top of the retaining wall. Retaining wall would be about this high, and a chain link fence comes up higher than that, about 4 feet.
Where the dotted line is?
No, sir. This dotted line is the easement.
Okay.
The retaining wall and the chain link fence is to the east of this by some 3.5 to 4 feet. I believe the field note description says 3.35 at the north end and 3.85 at the south end.
But it is definitely to the east of the easement. And it's definitely to the west of the retaining wall. And this is the point that I'm so anxious to have the court understand so that we'll see from our standpoint that even if the Court of Civil Appeals is wrong, even if we're wrong, and that we're not entitled as between private individuals to obtain the fee simple title under this easement and without disturbing the city's right, we sure ought to have our day in court as to our adverse possession of the 3 to 3.5 foot strip west of the retaining wall and east of the easement. And that we've been deprived of.
Now who built the fence?
East of the easement. And that we've been deprived of.
Now who built the fence?
Sir?
Who built the fence?
The fence was built by Mr. Shoemate in 1937.
Okay.
Mr. Hoffman, who later on owned the property, happened to be the contractor that did. But Mr. Shoemate owned the property and contracted for its erection. Bear in mind, Your Honor, that
this retaining wall did not just run right along this easement. Mr. Shoemate owned all of this property over, well, with the exception of the property right in here, 4-5 lot. He owned all of this property down here, and at about this place in here, he had a swimming pool. Over here, he had about 4 tennis courts. Over here was his home. He isolated the whole thing with this retaining wall and went completely around lot 4, circled this way, and went completely around lot 5. Walled everything out. And that's the reason he prevailed on the city to give them this alleyway that was an extension here so as to remove from his property, within his compound, any right of anyone to travel through it. So he had a solid piece of property there. He had a beautiful home, 3-foot into it, swimming pool, tennis court, the whole thing.
I hate to interrupt you one more time, Counselor, but if you went into the alleyway to get on the Ellis property, would you go down or up?
To go to the Ellis property from anywhere outside of it, Your Honor, on the west or south, you have to go down.
Okay.
It's from 8 feet to 15 feet lower than the rest of the elevation. I've mentioned that this is a summary judgment action really here in this court and not a trespass title suit. With respect to the entire tract, now this is one thing that I would like to mention to you, that the suit is a trespass to title action which describes in its petition all of the property owned by Mr. Ellis and Mr. McDonald. We have no reason to know why he elected in filing the suit to put in issue the title to any of his property which lies east of the retaining wall, because certainly no one, to my knowledge, not anyone that's connected with the respondents, has ever made any claim whatsoever to any of the property that lies east of the retaining wall. We didn't in our pleadings, we didn't in our summary judgment proof or affidavit, we didn't before the Court of Civil Appeals, and we do not now. And if this court is of the opinion that the judgment that was entered by the Court of Civil Appeals should be modified to correct any apparent error that was made in denying them the title to the property that lies east of that retaining wall, then I certainly join and say, fine, let's do that. Because we are not making any claim to any property lying east of that retaining wall. Testimony of Mr. Jansen was, I claim up to the retaining wall. I think Mr. Mangum asked him one time, do you claim the land under the fence or under the retaining wall? He said, I do not. I claim up to that wall. And no further. With reference to Article 55.17, every time that I have seen any reference to Article 55.17 made in the petitioner's brief, both here and in its appellee's brief in the Court of Civil Appeals, for some reason there always has been some omissions. The part that which is has been omitted is the line which says, which belongs to any town. Well, now certainly, if the city of Waco had the fee simple title to this property, we would not claim that we were entitled to obtain the title of that property by adverse possession. But the fact is that the city does not, this property does not belong to any city or town. They have an easement, no more. We're not here concerned with the city's easements, and we make no contentions about it, and the Court of Civil Appeals opinion specifically excluded that. The city was not a party to this lawsuit, so there couldn't have been any judgment that would have affected their rights in it in any event. But it does seem to me that the petitioners who are here claiming that they own the fee simple title of this property, subject of course to the easement, by virtue of a deed from Mr. Hoffman, their predecessor in title, indicate that it's possible to convey the fee simple title to this property which lies under the easement. And I certainly wouldn't dispute that that's a legal possibility. Matter of fact, it's also legally possible that this title to this property can change by a gift. It can change by a devise. It can change by a descent. If it were made the subject of a mortgage, it could be changed by foreclosure of a mortgage. If someone had a judgment against them, it could be changed by the execution of a judgment. But this is only as between private individuals. And I see no more reason to exclude Jansen from acquiring title by adverse possession than I do by Mr. Ellis and Mr. McDonald acquiring fee simple title by a deed or by a gift, devise, or any other way. I just fail to see that there should be any distinction. And I don't think that that's the purpose of 5517. The purpose of 5517 must be, it has to be, to protect the rights of the public.
I'm sure you have an answer for this. You're saying the easement is subterranean.
Yes, sir.
But as I heard the deed read, it said alley or passageway.
Yes, sir.
Now, that's not underground. Does the city own a passage or alleyway?
The city owned this easement, which I understand from the language of the, it really was a contract between the city and Shoemake. But I think that Mr. Mangum, correct the rate. The rate says, at all times shall be open and remain open as and far an alley and passageway for the use and accommodation of the city of Waco, the owners of contiguous lots, and the general public. So what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that I see a distinction between Mr. Ellis's ownership of the fee simple title to the property and the ownership of Mr. Ellis to the fee simple title burdened with the easement. And I find no problem with that. When Mr. Ellis got a deed to the property that he had, it included, according to the deed and the field note description, out to the west end of Lot 4, which included where the easement is. And he got the fee simple title, and he's asserting that. I say that if he has a fee simple title, if he has any kind of a title to property, he stands not only to own it, he stands to lose it under certain circumstances. He can lose it by judgment. He can lose it to taxes. And I think he can lose it by adverse possession. And I don't think that Article 55.17 has any application at all to the suit between private individuals over the title to the property burdened with the easement. And that's our position. But in conclusion, I want the court to understand that our thrust and the bottom line is that without regard to the 15-foot easement, there is about a 3 or 3.5 foot strip of land there that we have never had our day in court to show that we own by adverse possession. It's not owned by the city. It's not part of their easement. And it's property that is up for grabs as far as acquiring title by adverse possession. And we think we're entitled to show to a court and jury the elements that we say entitle us to judgment for adverse possession of that strip of land in any event.
How do you get limitations when you got an easement between your land and
by cleaning up, just exactly like in the Allen case recent case of this court, Allen versus Keeling, Your Honor, and Allen versus Keeling, exactly the same thing happened in that situation.
You couldn't get title to the easement by adverse possession.
No, sir.
What good would the title to that 3-foot strip do you set to aggravate Ellis?
Well, the one thing, Your Honor, is that if we have title to that 3 feet, then no one who's on the other side of that wall could come in there and disturb our yard to get to that easement. They're going to have to get to it from one end to the other, and they're not going to come across our yard to do it. In other words, if they're not a contiguous owner, if they're not an adjacent owner, then they have no private rights to come in and enforce this. And if
they're separated by 3.5 foot strip from here to here, then their access, they can't come in this way. They're going to have to come in from another direction.
They wouldn't be a contiguous owner then, you'd argue.
Sir?
They wouldn't be a contiguous owner, lot owner then, you'd argue, and then they couldn't use the strip.
They could use the strip, yes, sir, but they can't use it to get into that lot from along that easement there.
Yes, I think I understand.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Counsel, rebuttal argument from, excuse me, are you all through?
Yes,
sir. Okay. Rebuttal argument from petition.
May I just say one thing? I'm sorry, Your Honor. At this morning, after I came into court, I was presented with a pre-submission brief by petitioners. Assuming that this will be considered by the court, may I have an opportunity to respond to that by filing an answer to it?
How much time would you like?
10 days.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Of course, not having seen what Mr. McNamara intends to file, I can't know for sure, but I might like to file a response, Your Honor. Could we have that right?
I'm not going to pass on that right now, Counselor. You can call a motion for leave.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Of course, there is some confusion in my mind about what Mr. Jansen is really claiming, but he did on several occasions say that he wanted to claim over this fence over here on the McDonald property. I took his deposition. I said, have you measured that strip so that you can tell us what its measurements would be that you want to claim? Answer, no. question, if I showed you a map of that property, could you mark it off for me so we can know what part of it you are claiming? Answer, well, we know definitely what it is. It is the 15-foot easement. We have both looked at it, I am sure. Question, well, specifically, would it be this 15-foot easement that is set out in this plaintiff's exhibit number 3? Answer, that is correct. I am sure it would be. Yes, sir. Of course, there are other occasions, and I want to be honest with the court, when he said that he thought his property line was over there at the fence. Now, Mr. McNamara has stated to the court what he thinks is happening out there with regard to access and getting on and off of that property. I don't believe there's anything in the record about that. I'd like to answer that, but I'd have to go outside the record to do it. The record shows this, that, and it's uncontroverted by the affidavit attached to our motion for summary judgment, that that's the only reasonable access from Castle's right. That creek is 30 foot wide, that the terrain is uneven, that it would require excavation and cost in excess of $15,000, that it's all heavily wooded, that it would have to be cleared, leveled, excavated, bridges constructed, permission of the city of Waco obtained, etc. There's not anything in the record that says we're getting in somewhere else. And I'd like to answer what he said about that, but I don't feel that I should under the record. Now, regardless of whether this instrument creating this easement said that it was going to be 15 foot wide or 18 foot wide, this easement or this alleyway or this roadway, just like any other, includes its dimensions and sufficient ditches or property in connection with it. In other words, if people use 16 foot, then that's just too bad. You've got a 16 foot alley instead of a 15 foot like it originally stated. And what he's really telling this court is now, okay, I'm sorry, I really can't claim the alley between me and my neighbor, but you know, I look back and I think about it, and I used to mow that alley, and I think when I mowed the alley a time or two, I might have gotten over onto the property between the alley and his fence and mowed it property over there, so I'm going to claim it by adverse possession. I'm going to try to take it away from him on that basis. That's really what we've gotten down to when you get to talking about this 2 or 3 foot strip over there. Of course, Allen versus Keeling doesn't have anything to do with this case. That was a prescriptive easement case. Mr. Keeling wanted to use the road over on the Allen Ranch Road over on the Allen Ranch, and he wanted to go across a piece of Mr. Allen's property to get to it. Of course, this court held you got to be an abutting owner in order to have rights in a prescriptive easement. And to the extent that he's saying we're not a contiguous owner, what happens to the court? This is our property. We're contiguous to it on this side of it, at the back of it. There's not fence. There's nothing to keep us from getting over to it. And besides that, we're the record title owner. Besides that, of course, the easement says contiguous landowners and members of the public. Any member of the Waco, Texas can use that easement if this judgment stands up. Now, he again used this language that he's used in the brief in the Court of Civil Appeals. He says this property is in our yard. Mr. McDonald wanted to go across our yard. Of course, that's what the lawsuit's all about, and that's what this court's going to determine, not Mr. Jensen. Whose yard is the property in? Now, he's saying, really, don't rule against me because it would be inconvenient for Mr. McDonald to use this. He'd have to spend some money. He'd have to cut this fence down and breach this wall. Well, that's our problem. Mr. McDonald made that determination when he started making arrangements, when he bought this property, relying on this statute and knowing that it was in existence, when he checked with the city and sent his people out there to do the surveys, and send his people out there to put in the approach to that alley. That's his problem, not Mr. Jensen. Now, he mentions language in Article 55.17 that says, which belongs to any city. That language is in the statute. It certainly is. But there's a lot of other language in there where it goes right on and says, or which has been donated or dedicated to public use in any city or town. So it's not limited to property that the title is in the city, and none of the cases have ever so held. And many of the cases didn't even involve a city. Now back to the point at hand. This Court of Civil Appeals below has held that a private individual can get title to a public dedication despite Article 5517 of the Texas Revised Civil Statutes. This statute and all of the cases interpreting it, that is a rule of property. Businessmen, landowners, everybody has been making decisions on it since 1885, whenever it was enacted. Contracts have been entered into with regard to it. Now, I don't care whether it's a good rule or a bad rule. Everybody knows what the rule is. And it's a firm rule and easily understandable. And it determines the title of property. Thousands and thousands of title opinions have been written on it. It must be upheld. To do anything otherwise is to cast doubt on the titles of the property all over the state of Texas. Now, just briefly, Mr. McNamara mentioned about modifying the judgment below. He said, we never claimed any of their property other than this easement. If that's true, why did he file a plea of not guilty, which means that we admit we dispossessed you, that we own, that we're claiming title to all of it? All he would have had to do is say, not guilty except for this part of it. He never did that. He put us to the burden of proving it. We did prove it. We got a judgment in our favor as to all the rest of our property, which we should have, because there was no contest of fact issue about that or any other aspect of the case. That's been reversed. The court has held that we weren't entitled to a judgment for all of our property, as to which he said he didn't even have any interest in. Judgment of the Court of Civil Appeals must be reversed, in our opinion.
Case is submitted on written briefs, no other.